One of the top challenges for people seeking employment and education is access to reliable transportation. That's why Well-Built Bikes refurbishes donated bicycles and provides them to struggling community members. If you have an old or unused bike that you can donate to their cause, it could provide mobility and independence to someone who can't afford a car or a brand new bike of their own. Visit BikeShopTampa.com to learn more, or swing by the Well-Built Bike store in the University Mall on Fowler Avenue.
All right, welcome once again to another Work Ethic Podcast. I'm really excited about today's episode, which I am often, but I am with a good friend, Dr. Mark Gessner. And I tell you what, man, I looked at, so a lot of times I'll pull up someone's LinkedIn and like randomly pull a few things off, but I want you to introduce yourself to everyone. But I'm going to get you started because I think you have a really good summary on your LinkedIn here. So I'm actually going to read this as it is on there, and then I'm going to throw you the ball to kind of introduce yourself to everybody. So here's Mark's kind of summary of himself here. He says, "My focus is fostering community engagement, growing healthy organizations, and working with others to make a positive social and economic impact. I invest time into strengthening individuals and systems, building partnerships, creating innovative programs, advancing social entrepreneurs, dispelling stereotypes, teaching and learning, and developing mission-driven leaders locally and globally." Okay, what do you at? What do you do? What do you? Yeah, just tell us a little bit, Mark. Introduce yourself to everyone. Who are you?
Well, John, it's great to be here in the, the hive of the central posts of John Begler.
We made it happen. I would have sworn you'd been here. I swear, when I was like, yeah, just come to the place where we met before, but you hadn't. When you came in, I was like, oh, no. I would have sworn you'd been here.
No,
in my heart, you've been here.
Oh, thanks, John. And it's great to see you in your environment with Gandhi, Mother Teresa behind you, and who knows what else is in here. So it's pretty cool. So,
awesome.
Yeah. No, thanks for reading the summary. So what's your question is, who am I?
Well, just introduce yourself.
Introduce myself. Yeah, Mark Gessner, and grew up in New York. Love to talk about my big family in Brooklyn, where a lot of who I am got shaped, my values, and a lot of how I think. And from there, I was a wayward soul for a while and did lots of different jobs. Landed at youth hostels, could talk about that some. And then from hostels to higher ed and now back to nonprofits, that's some of the career path. But I think the point about connecting with mission-driven leaders and trying to be one myself are the nuggets of who I am. That's what I care about.
Yeah, I think, do you remember how we first connected?
I'm sure it was a poignant experience, but I can't remember.
I don't specifically remember either, actually.
I think I came to the bike shop, actually, to recruit you for that
Accelerator class. I think that might be right.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that, like, as I've gotten to know you, the frame of getting to know you was mostly around, and maybe this would be a good place to kind of kick off and we could work our way back into some of your earlier years, kind of how I experienced your story, but was for this accelerator. So when I met Mark, he was at St. Leo's, which you're no longer at, and you were running an accelerator program. Because I think this is where we started to get to know each other, and it really illustrates kind of your heart around impact. So, like, maybe explain what that was, and then we can kind of go back and forward from there, because that was, like, I think where I encountered you, and then we'll navigate from there.
Sure. Yeah, so we connected around the Social Enterprise Accelerator at the time for St. Leo University. I had done it prior in other iterations in different places in Wisconsin and elsewhere. But the whole idea of the program is to help people who are running nonprofits balance their heart around the mission and their drive around impact and financial margin. So how do you sustain nonprofits and organizations in a way that are having their desired end and also they're sustainable? That's the program, and we can go broader than that if you want.
Yeah, no, it was an incredible program. You've got quite the posse of leaders that you were able to bring in and connect us with, And so as I was getting to know you there, and I actually think maybe it was on a Zoom call that we did before the class started or something, you started telling me about hostels. And I forget exactly why that came up, but even as you brought it up now, it's like, it's so particular and unique. So like, how did you find your way into that world? And when? So you said that like it was quite young, right? Like you were
mid-20s. Yeah.
Now, what about earlier?
So what, in terms of earlier, in terms of family stuff? Well, let me go this way.
Yeah.
So hostels has had a big impact on me. And so for people who don't know it, youth hostels come in lots of shapes and forms. People have traveled. Part of the idea is they're an affordable way to travel. You sleep usually in bunk rooms. You have common kitchens and different places where you venture out, common rooms. You tell stories to each other about the place you're traveling in, and then you go out and see it and experience it together. And it's really, I think, a lot helps people feel alive, and it makes it accessible. So a lot of people who couldn't afford travel this is a venue to do that. Some hostels, anybody can call themselves a hostel. Some are not too pretty, and
I've been to a few
not
of those.
In great shape.
I've been to a few of those.
Some people, and then others are palaces, or on in amazing settings, and castles, or historic buildings. So it's a whole range. I worked for the American Youth Hostel. It's called Hosteling International USA now. So that's a nonprofit that has standards and lots of programming. Anyway, now programming around seeing the world, around travel, around cross-cultural exchange, and developing community, right? That's at its heart, is bring people together with all different backgrounds under a common roof, trying to see a similar place, and talking to each other, gathering around a table, making a meal together. So I think we talked some about, gather around the table. Let's have a conversation.
This is kind of how we define so much of the work that we do, really. Like, we're always setting tables, even when they're not physical tables. Whether it's a hike or in a garden or other work that we're doing together, it's a table that we're setting. And it does sound like building community is at the very heart of that. That work. Now, you did that for a long time, right?
I did. So when I was trying to figure out my life in my 20s and where I was going to go, what I was going to do, I was traveling. I went cross country for 10 weeks or so in a VW Bug convertible that didn't always make it, but made it in the end. And so I left and found a place in Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, which is a gorgeous resort area, but there's a hostel there. I checked in the fall and was staying there for a bit. And the guy running at the time said, "Hey, Mark, you really seem to like it here. Maybe you should stay a while." So I stayed for 6 years, and I ended up going from a guest to running the place a little while later, being a staff person, being the manager, then being a regional director for the hostels in the New England area, and then being part of the national senior leadership team for the national organization. But it was there that I got the bug. I became a believer and saw the power of that, the mission of that organization, bring people together. It's also what planted the seeds for all the social enterprise stuff that I come back to. But the thing at a hostel, and when you travel, maybe, I don't know if you've experienced this, people are pretty, can be who they are. Like, they're fully present, they're live, they want to engage, they have less of the, barriers up. And so you really get to know people and learn a lot from people. And that, I got to do that every day for years because people are coming through there. So it's pretty amazing.
That's incredible. So you actually just went as a, like, you were on vacation. You just went to and stayed there.
Well, I don't know, vacation sometimes, maybe when you have a job. I didn't have that at that point. But yeah, no, I was trying to figure out where I was headed and stopped there. And then
that's amazing.
Got immersed. And then became part of that island community. Martha's Vineyard is an island. Most people know of it for the rich and famous, but there's a year-round community there that makes that place work, from people working at the schools and the farms and the shops. And those are mostly the people who I connected with and got to know and appreciated
it
a lot.
I hear some of those people are having a hard time right now having enough place to be, too, because of the, let's say, the wealthier side of the, there's a lot of land is at a premium there, right? And it's gotten to be a tough place for some of the those that are cooking meals and right. you know, the serving the other folks there.
Definitely. But it's also, that's absolutely true. I think when I was there, which was a while ago, it also gave me the chance to learn a lot, not just through the community that I was immersed in and the beginnings of social enterprise, yeah. but also learning a lot from others doing that work, you know? So that was really helpful as well.
What was the guy's name that invited you to stay?
Bert.
I'm intrigued by this guy. So can you tell us a little bit about him? So how did, because I'm just intrigued that he singled you out and transformed your life in a conversation, basically. He said, hey, why don't you do this? And then you were there all the way up to the national organization. It just seemed like what a significant conversation to prompt.
Yeah. I mean, Bert was a traveler, done a lot of interesting different things. I think still to this day is probably mostly in doing yoga and different connection with more spirituality. Uh-huh. I don't know that for sure. I haven't talked to him in a while.
Okay.
But at that time, he had a lot of world experiences and he had run some different things before of that sort. And he was filling in there. He was what was called the house parent at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. And so because there weren't that many people there, he really got a chance to know people. And I can remember it very clearly because he was in the apartment that I ended up living in, and he sat me down there and he fed me a chicken dinner. And he said, we just started talking like we are now, you and I are. And that's when he said pretty quickly, he said, man, you really seem to love it. You feel like you're at home here. And
that's
so,
amazing.
And that concept of home has also followed me, throughout, and the importance of what home means. So work, home, those things, as I know you, John, have a lot of put a lot of thought into those things, and those have been some of the through lines, some of the threads of my work in nonprofits, in higher ed, in social entrepreneurship.
Can you say more about home then? I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Okay. So you can discover home, I think, anywhere, right? So that idea of being home when you're comfortable in your own skin, when you're fully present and alive, when you connect, when you feel clarity, that's what I'm talking about when you feel at home.
Yeah.
And so I was feeling at home at that hostel at that time. And I do often feel at home when I'm traveling around the world and have traveled a lot in the years since. And I think part of the challenge is getting rid of noise sometimes so that you can get back home, which is it's not so easy to do, you know? And that's been a thread for me. One of the first classes I taught when I was a faculty member in college was taught international students who were their first semester in a new place. And the course was called Discovering Home.
Yeah.
So that they could figure out how is it that they connect to the place where they were living and for themselves.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept, like the, you know, because the way you're talking about it, it's like a state of being almost, and as opposed to like even like the way you couple it with traveling, like I feel at home traveling, which is like, well, that's when you're not home, technically, right? It's an intriguing thought, actually. And what comes to mind, and I don't know if this relates at all, but one of the things I most love about traveling is coming home, actually coming to my city, like flying into Tampa, if I get to fly, and looking out the window and going, that's mine. Like, as we come in, there's something about returning to the place that I'm from that you only really get to experience because you left it, like because you went away from it. It wasn't constantly kind of there for you, but that's always a special thing for me. And probably the thing that I get, it's an interesting thing, like not like I don't want to be away, but that just the reentry experience is really
sure.
always a powerful one for me. So you said seeds were planted for what would become like kind of the social entrepreneurship and social enterprise kind of in that space. Some of it I think is pretty obvious, but can you kind of like how so?
Yeah.
What seeds?
Sure. So when I started there, it was a small, medium-sized place that kind of broke even financially, right? But,
okay.
But in the organization, as I got more immersed in it and worked with people who were running large urban hostels in Boston and New York and elsewhere, and also talking to more people who had running tiny hostels that had 8 beds, that okay. No way they could make a living off of it. They were doing it because they were true believers in the mission of the organization.
Yep.
And so when I talked to those people, they said, look, we're the heart of the, and soul of this organization. We know the mission about bringing people together from different cultures and helping them explore new places and, you know, affordable travel. This is what we care about, and this is why we do it. And without us, this organization wouldn't be here. And then there were the people, hospitality professionals, who were running large urban facilities that had, our New York facility at the time had 624 people staying every night. Whoa. And you needed professional hospitality experience to run such a large lodging facility. And so not all, everyone would, but a lot of the people in large hostels, probably to this day too, had professional hospitality experience. And one guy who I worked in particular, Bob, who was in Boston, he recognized that he was sort of a cash cow for the organization, right? And would say, look, all that programming mission stuff is great, but without us in the urban hostels, there'd be no organization.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you need that sort of balance and have an understanding and appreciation of both.
Yeah.
And often, I think people would really see that they were either true believers or the ones driving the financial engine and sort of humored each the other because they had some understanding that they needed the other, but maybe didn't totally
appreciate.
Yeah. So my job, as I went on, sometimes I felt was translating and balancing mission and margin and helping people see how they fit together.
Man, how did you find your way into the university world then? Like, how did you navigate? Like, where did hostel come to an end, and is there something between those in transition then, or like how did you find your way into like education?
So when I decided to leave, and there's a lot of, it's an educational mission, right, for hostel, and I was responsible for a lot of the programming and putting on those things, so there was some connection. But then when it was time to leave that organization, it was a chance for my wife to say, all right, let's move to the Midwest where her family was from.
Okay.
And so I didn't have a specific plan at that point of what was going to be next, although the immediate next thing was that our daughter was, how old was she? 2. And so I primarily, at the beginning, stayed home with her, and okay. My wife, who's far more marketable than I am, got a job. And then I was trying to decide what to do, and I started connecting with people at the local university and found a great niche there because there was a center for community partnerships. This is in near Racine, Wisconsin, in between Chicago and Milwaukee. And this center essentially was the bridge between the academy or the university and the community. And how do you create community partnerships? How do you meaningfully collaborate with and not think you're giving from on high some charity, but really meaningfully partnering and mutually beneficial partnerships and respecting community leaders who are bringing all this talent, and you have assets at the university that you can use to collaborate with them. So you've probably been in some partnerships, right, John, with the, you know, different university partners. So I was the guy on the university side who said, end up straddling. So it was not a conventional role, right? Wasn't a faculty member. I did teach some stuff, but it was really creating partnerships, you know, doing workforce development connections and doing entrepreneurship connections or figuring out what the nonprofits in the community needed. And we had a team doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do know some people that do that, like at USF, and they're the kind of the community engagement. And I actually, it's to me, I mean, probably for obvious reasons, because the thing that I would have the most kind of touch with, but also the most interesting at the university to me is like the getting students off of campus, getting connected with the organization, like what's actually going on kind of outside of that little silo.
And so then I, and so I grew up in like running the in higher ed, running internship programs then, and anything that was community engagement, community engaged learning, or partnering with the community, that was my stuff. And then when I moved to from that one university to another one in Milwaukee, essentially, I led this innovation hub. Really, most of what was in the hub were things that were not in the traditional lanes of the college. So,
for example?
So within our hub, we had that social entrepreneurship program that we developed there. We had an African-American leadership program. We had a literacy program. There was the connection to public safety program, leadership development in that. So, and on, and on, you know, several, or a place to try new stuff. So if you want to try a new program or do something that wasn't, you weren't getting 3 credits for, you know, for an undergrad, but wanted to do something interesting, that was a gateway to do it, both from inside and outside. So hopefully, if I did my job right, and I did the same, similar job at St. Leo University more recently near here in Tampa, it's people in the community say, okay, I don't know exactly where to go in that university, but if I talk to Mark, he'll point me in the right direction, or he'll give a shot at doing something together. So that's, you know, end up working also with government and different private sector, that sort of thing. So that's that was the role.
Now, before we started to get into the hosteling, and I said, like, what about before that? Because I realized, oh, you were at your 20s when you get in now. And you mentioned your daughter being 2 at the time. And I was like, okay, let's go way, way back. I try to ask everybody about their first memory of, like, when the concept of work took on meaning in their life. So can you, what is your earliest memory of, like, where you started learning this concept of work?
Yeah, so I love that thread that you have in this podcast, in your voracious appetite to hear what people think about this. And so knowing that it's not just about the jobs, and
right,
you know, I had the paper route. I worked at Baskin Robbins, so I did that stuff and proud of it. They were great experiences. But I think really the work ethic is shaped by your values.
Yeah.
And if I think about where my values got shaped, it's growing up in this large family. I lived outside of New York City, but we had a large family that gathered in Brooklyn. So went to a ton of events there, and there were my grandmother and 2 great aunts, they presided over those meals and over those holidays. And the way they prepared it, the way they welcomed people, the way they were committed to it, the way they did it with integrity, just and the love that they put into it, that's what I take with me everywhere. So
interesting.
You know, my grandma May, I love being there, and she made great food and took great care of us, but she made, I think I'm biased perhaps, but I think she made everyone feel at home.
Yeah.
And I think and so she lived in an apartment, and upstairs from her was my great aunt Betty. And she made part of the meal a little bit. And then my great aunt Pearl and her husband lived across, and they had the house, and that had the room for everyone to gather. So the 3 matriarchs, you got their branches. So everyone come in, and if you want to bring someone else, they can come along with them. And so it was not unusual at all to have, you know, 40, 50 people at every time we would get together, and the 3 of them would take the lion's share of the work.
Yeah.
And making sure that people felt welcome and felt at home, and there was a community.
And that was something that happened regularly?
Yes, since I can remember.
Really?
Yeah. So I'll just put out there, you know, my father passed when I was 5.
Okay.
And so having that extended family and having all that connection meant a lot. And so I can remember going there since at least that time. And I'm sure we went there earlier, but I can clearly remember us going there and being part of that. And that's why I'm still, I think, care about a lot my cousins and others that are in different places, because I grew up with them. And
that's awesome.
So the connection to work, I hope that comes through.
Yeah,
that, you know, the values of how do you, it's a job, they had a job well done, I would say, by my.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way you connect it with the making someone feel at home, and even the relationships that, like, the work that went into setting the table. It, like, ties to these other things we're talking about, the work that went into setting the table so that you would have family, be it the family would be at home together and these relationships that are developed there. And I could kind of see how that, just like abstracting that, translates into setting the table, like in bringing people together in a hostel or making partnerships work in connection with university or community, or like there's like a, seems like a kind of a core feature maybe that you've been able to carry through.
Hope so. I mean, and I think that that's my, if I was doing a podcast, John, I would look at how do your core values influence everything you do. And that's, you know, in some of the work and writing that done around leadership development, that's a common thread. People really, the people who have been transformational leaders, yeah, whether they're famous or not so famous, they start, we have found, my co-author Nancy and I, who together and separately interviewed tons of leaders right around the world, and that's this thread that they start, who are they? They know their values, and then their why, you know, what is it they're trying to achieve? What lane are they going in? What path are they taking? So their purpose, however you want to describe, yeah, it. Then looking at their what impact are they trying to make? And, you know, a couple of the luminaries on the wall behind you are part of this story, whether it was Gandhi or down to earth, seemingly down to earth people or accessible people like someone who started an eco-lodge or ran a community center.
Yep.
They all followed this path of who are you, what are your values, your why, your purpose, then what's the impact you're trying to make, and then how do you get there? A pragmatic part,
yep,
of how do you implement and get it done. And so that was the common thread, and I think that fascinates me, and that is my I think it connects really powerfully to work.
Yeah, I'm well, and I do actually do think a lot of times work, my understanding is like how it's the idea of embodying your values. Like that's actually what you're trying to flesh out, this thing that you believe in, right? And bring it into being, into, mm-hmm, existence or whatever. How, as you talk about kind of core values, do you feel like those are for you? Like, are you like able to go, like, are they articulatable? Or you're like, yes, I have, there are five driving values, and they, like, how crystallized is that for you?
Pretty crystallized.
Yeah.
So hopefully already anyone listening, or you probably could guess them, because, yep, I start repeating them, hopefully, you know,
yep,
because that's what I believe in. So I think a lot about relationships,
yep,
a lot about community. Mm-hmm. And I have a little bit about innovation mixed in there. So those are some of the things that are core, and you know, innovation and exploration. So that travel piece comes out there, the stuff around the kind of work I've done in developing nonprofits and teaching and making partnerships about relationships, right? You're much better read than me, John, but someone like a Buber would say that God's in the relationships.
Yeah. Right?
And, or there's lots written, you know, Margaret Wheatley, around relationships are the only thing, right? And so I agree with them.
I think that's right. I think that's
and
right.
And so, yeah, that connection happens, whether it's in a hostel or in a classroom or in a community partnership, for me, yeah, that's the thread. And that's the attempt at making my life my message, right? That's Gandhi's, one of his wonderful quotes, right? When people asked him, mm-hmm, what is it, you know, if you could sum up your life's work to explain what it is that you believe in, sort of like your question, he said, well, my life is my message. He actually wrote it on a piece, yeah, of paper on a train. You probably know the story, but it's, that to me is powerful. So as whether I'm hosting a interview with a mission-driven leader or doing this kind of work, I want to see if I can get at their life's message. And their core values are usually discussed in that. And often those core values got shaped early on in,
yeah,
some way, right? So for me, yeah, I know it clearly. I know where it was shaped. I mean, my family and what I saw, particularly, well, from my mother and others, but also in that Brooklyn home,
yep,
and seeing those three women preside, a lot came from that.
That's, yeah. It's really cool that, I mean, I don't know that it is that common that someone can trace that back that specifically young. I don't know that that even is the case. I guess mm-hmm. I'd have to do some real work to explore that. But I think, and this, just to like mirror off of that, is like, I think a lot of things were developed later on because, like, so for, I think my car accident was a huge, huge, like, set point in my life that almost before that matters, but not as much as like the new beginning that mm-hmm. came, you know, from an experience like that. I think a lot of things for me were shaped later on. And interestingly, as you started out, before you kind of got, at some point you said, I was like really wayward. I was a wayward soul, not sure what I was going to do. And like these seeds had been planted. Maybe they hadn't started to bear the fruit or become made so explicit. But like, talk to me about that wayward season then before you. So now you like, you're young and you're in Brooklyn with all this big family, and then we have this fast forward to 20 something at a hostel. Like what happens in the interim?
So I've had a couple of times in my life where I felt kind of lost.
Yeah. Right?
And so that in that time, it was having a number of different jobs. But I want to answer it a different way.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Instead, because, please. And I'm curious if you answer this too. Like, one of the things that I love when I'm exploring or when I'm trying to figure things out, when it can be more open to people who have pearls of wisdom or have guidance or have lessons that may seem really small at the time, but mm-hmm. then you carry it with you.
Yeah.
And I definitely have found that. So when I traveled, or in different points, different mentors plant these seeds. This is what made me think of it. And I was like, wow, I didn't think that would be such a big deal, but it is. There's one story that I think of often, and it's connect. I think of it now because of the connection to work. So when I was on Martha's Vineyard, I had a few different jobs. I didn't just run the hostel. I was also worked on a farm. I worked in an elementary school. I volunteered at a chocolate shop. There's a great work ethic there. I can tell you about it, but lots of different things, right? But one of the things at the farm, so when I started at the farm, I was in the field. It was a vegetable farm. And it didn't take them too long to recognize that my talents were elsewhere.
That's a good way to say it.
I was slow, you know, and everyone else was quicker than me in the field.
Yeah.
But they could tell maybe that I had some value of some sort to the farm, and they put me in the farm stand. And so I loved that job because in that I was stocking the vegetables and fruit. I was making them look great. I was talking to the customers, and I felt like I was pretty good at that.
Yeah.
And then the next kind of honor was I got to work with the chefs in the area. So I was sort of behind the scenes. The chefs would call in and order what they wanted for their, you know, for their restaurant. And the lesson I learned then is that, and maybe this is not a surprise to you or others, but the best chefs, they treated me great. I mean, they treated me like gold and with respect. And I felt like, maybe I was just a kid, I didn't really know otherwise, but I felt like it was real. Like they knew that I was key in them being successful, or they had some respect for what I was doing, some combination. And so when the sophisticated French chef said, I want the carrots the size of my forefinger and not my pinky, I gave him bunches of carrots that were the right size.
Yeah.
But when the lousy chef said, you know, could care less and treated me like dirt, I give him the dregs. And he never knew. He never cared. And I never ate at his restaurant.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like lessons like that that keep happening over time. In different places. And so I think when you're a wayward soul and you're looking for guidance, or even when you're not, hold on to some of those things, that the lessons learned from that there was a poet in El Salvador that I was visiting who was so gracious to me. I have a picture of him still, and he was a poet, farmer kind of guy. And I said, how could you be so kind to me when our country hasn't always been so kind to your country?
Yeah.
I don't know, that's what I said at the time. And he said, well, we of all people should know that a government and its people don't always agree.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just like, of course, you're a human being. I'm going to treat you with respect. It was a good lesson. And on and on. I had a a mentor in college who was a Unitarian minister. He came back to do some other stuff. And Rudy was this expert at asking questions. And it was like months and months of knowing him, and I couldn't get through a conversation with him without just answering all his questions. He would just keep asking because he was so curious. Finally, I figured out to learn about him, I had to end my answer with a question.
Yeah.
So that I could get him
something
to talk.
Back. Yeah.
You know, so lots of folks like that, lessons big and small, that I think help along with core values guide me. And
yeah.
So if I get wayward now, those are the kind of things I lean on. So it doesn't totally answer your question. It was a little bit of a
no. It's
a riff,
fine.
But
that's fine.
But I love those folks, and I, if I can tune in to people like that, I mean, that's why I like hanging out with you, John. I mean, I come away from you and I think, shoot, that, like, I take some nugget,
yeah,
and feel like I'm, that's helpful. Like that is helpful in. I don't know what the word is, you know, steering or stabilizing. And
well, it seems like good. An important part of relationships, too, where yeah. it's mutual, like it's same. And like with the you stimulate one another. You
yeah.
kind of it's mutually edifying. You kind of like build on and build. And this is the I mean, at some level of that deep value of relationship and why we are better together. And when we can. When we can figure out how, and then, you know, for me, like a lot of times that relationship is best made shoulder to shoulder with shared work.
Mm.
Like when we actually have a project together, it's genuinely a deeper, like at some level, I do imagine at some point I'm going to come up with some project to do with someone while we do a podcast. So it'll be like, yeah, we're going to build this thing while we have this conversation. Just, I want to see how that goes at some point to see, you know, because mm-hmm. I do think there's something special about shoulder to shoulder work.
Yeah. That's great. That's probably frankly like the nugget for me today is that a different way I would answer the simile in a different, if you ask the question again, it's the work that I've loved is when the relationships are built into it.
Yeah.
And so whether that was the relationship that I saw in my family or, you know, in a hostel as a community, a university as a community, the nonprofits that I've tried to work
yeah.
with and work with now, it's all about community. And so the work is, you can't do any of that stuff by yourself.
That's
infused
amazing.
In it. That's good stuff, John. That's, I agree.
So you've made a bit of a career transition recently, right?
I have. I left higher ed, and I'm back helping to lead a nonprofit. It's the Tampa JCCs and Federation here in Tampa. So it's, at its heart, a community center.
Yeah.
It's based in Jewish values and of community, of kindness, of helping repair the world, and that's based in those values. And when you walk in there, whether you're in the preschool and you're 6 months, or you're in a active adults program and you're 90, or somewhere in between with the fitness center or arts and culture and a whole different variety of programs, yeah, it's a community center, and it's built and there's strength in it through the relationships that are there. It's interesting. You know, someone asked me the other day, we're talking about, well, what exciting things are you going to do there, like next year? Or in three years.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, I really, you know, I get that. Like, I
strategic plan.
Your strategic plan. I've done a lot of those. You need to have those things for sure. But as I was thinking about it more, it's particularly in these times in the world, the strength of the community. So, like, got to double down on community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the vision, is to really strengthen that and to have an awareness of it. Yeah, that doesn't mean you don't keep doing exciting things, and I love the innovation and creating new things, but I think that felt right to me. There's a parable you probably know about, but just to connect. So person is new to the community and walks to a playground and sees all these people, what looks to be like this playground, working on it, and asks them, you know, trying to figure out what is it exactly that they're doing. He wants to ask them. So he goes up to the first person who's swinging a hammer, and he says, so what are you doing there? What are you doing there? And she says, well, I'm building a swing set. And then the next person goes up to, looks like she's doing the same thing. She says, well, what are you doing? And she says, well, I'm building a playground. And then the third person walks up to, what are you doing? Swinging a hammer. And she says, I'm building a community.
Yeah.
I'm building a community. And there's variations of that that you're probably aware of.
Yeah.
But it's these different lenses and different, and others, neither is good or bad. It's, there's different lenses and different kinds of how people are envisioning things. So I think for me right now, I'm building a community.
Yeah.
I'm building a community, or doing my best to contribute to building a community.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I, you know, that's that that kind of parable reminds me, you know, like that it's interesting, like the meaning that we bring to our work is really an important, it's what drives us, you know what I mean? And so like,
right.
Like I forget who it was, one of the guests that I've had on was talking about like someone laying maybe brick, you know, and it's like, you could just be like, I'm a bricklayer, but like, or like I build, like, you know, they're building that, the, maybe it's a church and they're building the house of God. They're building a community. They're building like the frame around which you put that is like this, the exact same task can take on tremendous life. And I always think of that Nietzsche quote, like, you know, he who has a why can endure anyhow. And it's like, you can walk through hell if you know why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just about anything that you can put yourself through if there's purpose behind it, meaning behind it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is those narratives. It's the story, it's the building of a community and things like that.
And then connected to that, and this is sort of a little, I don't know if it's a pet peeve or not, but you know, you just made me think of, a lot of times people talk about their why, or it's their mission.
Right? Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the equivalent of that.
Yeah.
And so there's a fairly popular book, Start With Why.
Yeah.
But so the pushback on that, and then I think we put in our book, and I think I know, is you start with who, and that's your values.
You know,
and
I love that. Yeah.
Then you go to your why and your mission, but that's the underpinning, right? So that's, and the reason why I think I have a fairly good idea of what my values are and can articulate them and where they started is because I'm fascinated by that origin story that people have, or where is it that they got their values, where they rooted in, and how that helps them have influence in the world.
Yeah.
Right? That's the leadership part, right? Mm-hmm. So when people align their actions with their values, and there's that, Nancy, my co-author would say that when there's that coherence,
yep.
right, then you can start to have powerful influence. And that's another consistent thing that leaders have, is effective leaders, and whether for good or ill, they have figured some strong alignment out to have influence towards the goal that they're trying to achieve, whatever impact they are. So that's, I'm attracted to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I see in you. You know, like when you talk, and I mean, what would you say your core values are now?
Well, you know, so I don't know that I have them like, oh, let's rattle these off.
Yeah.
But I would say freedom is core.
Okay.
And which, by the way, I would say is how I understand, which is why poverty is the great enemy. So poverty is the opposite of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty is to be in captivity. So I would say addiction is poverty, like every kind of stripping of human freedom. But freedom is, and then with freedom is responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is all tied to me for like, to the work ethic, is like taking responsibility for what is within your reach or within your control, exercising freedom and responsibility. This is like what we're created to do, as far as I could tell. We're made to be free. And so I'm not, I think at some level that is my like core belief or core value, is like humans should be free.
Uh-huh.
And you should act like it, and you should be held accountable to what you do with your freedom. And that can be paralyzing, actually, like when you really realize like I'm completely free and responsible for what I do next. That there's, you know, I think for some people that can be like existentially paralyzing, but anyway, so that is huge. And then I would say hospitality is a big one. So welcoming the stranger, the other, and then I would take that to almost theological language, like with a capital O. So this is the future, this is God, this is the unknown, this is like everything that is scary that knocks at the door. I think an open door, opening the door takes courage and mm-hmm. is fundamental. So in my mind, hospitality kind of equals being willing to die. So a freedom that it has the courage to use your freedom, to take responsibility, to have the courage to open your door to vulnerability, to the unknown, to the other, to the stranger, to the one knocking.
Yeah.
Those are like fundamental beliefs for me. And when I look at like what I think is wrong with the world around me, it usually comes back to trying to stay alive will make you act all kind of terrible ways. Not like basically doing whatever it takes to stay alive. So not being willing to die, and then not honoring or not embracing your own freedom and responsibility, or honoring someone else's freedom and responsibility. Those are like fundamental building blocks for me. I don't know how well that is as an answer, but
yeah, I think it's a pretty clear answer.
Yeah, it is pretty clear.
And it
for
guides
me.
You every day, from what I can tell. I mean, to the best of your ability, like that appears to be the work that you're doing.
It is. It is. Yeah, it is. It. Well, it's everything to me. Right. Yeah. It's an obsession. It's got a hold of me because it is. So the work that we do with from just like hunger and poverty around us, like material poverty, to wanting to build, city building in general, is like we want to build a world that is hospitable, that the table is set for everyone to gather, where people are treated as free, equal, and responsible citizens.
Yeah.
And could hold each other accountable. And I do think that back to the, because I think relationships tied into both of those, is like our relationship to the other. That's the hospitality piece, but like I think poverty being the opposite of freedom it grows out of relationships not working. So I think relational is the approach to all of these things. So like we have people with no resources, and then resources, it's like there's like gaps, there's houses that sit empty and people with no houses, or there's like when relationships don't work like they should, this is how poverty gets like plays out in our world. By which I mean not just like material poverty, but I mean limiting of human freedom. So addiction, right. Captivity, all of those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just pretty striking. It's funny to me, at least, that you said, or understandable, but that before you said, when you started to say your core values, you hesitate and say, well, I don't know if I could just like, put them out there, like list them off.
Yeah.
You listed them off and with clarity. So clearly, and which didn't surprise me, either, because you articulate that every time I talk to you, there's something connected to one or more of those.
Yep.
The one thing I haven't heard you say as much about in the past, which I love, is around the hospitality piece. And that I think maybe there, to connect on that one, that's what I love that about the youth hostels, right? Mm-hmm. And welcoming people in, the idea of home everywhere, and how are you hospitable and help people discover home.
Yep.
That when I went to St. Leo University, which is a Catholic Benedictine university.
Yeah, I was very excited walking on campus and seeing all those statues and stuff.
And what is, and one of the first lessons from one of the sisters was about radical hospitality.
Yeah.
And what's that about? I was like, yeah. I like that. That resonates, and so I don't know. Just
know that it is profound to me. I actually do think that it is. At some level, I think that's what I don't even know how to say that. Like it's like at the core of, let's say, my faith life is. I think hospitality. I think in Christianity, Jesus would. Forget Christianity, but like Jesus, the person, was like, the one time he ever talked about judgment, he said like, I was hungry, I was sick, I was naked, I was in prison, and you visited me, you let me in, you fed me, you and it was like the one time he ever talked about something like judgment, what it might look like, it was about how you engaged with those in need, with those that needed visited, with those that were sick or naked or without.
Yeah.
And I do think like our posture toward the other is just a fundamental, I think it's a fundamental challenge of life. And I do think there's a book by Ernest Becker called The Denial of Death.
Okay.
It's phenomenal, but it basically just makes the case like everything that you're doing wrong and everything. It's just like all of it comes back to like, I'm not willing to die. I'm not like, I'm afraid to die. Everything about my life is like a project in trying to avoid death and not, there's like, he, I feel like it's in that book. He said like at some level consciousness is like, we're aware that we're like conscious quivering creatures in the corner of a potential in a potentially meaningless universe awaiting our impending doom. I'm just like, it's like it's like good existential psychology.
Yeah.
But at some level, I do think like, yeah, the knock at the door is just such a powerful, you know, even just like you drive down the road and someone's panhandling on the side of the road. It's like, how can we make eye contact? Can we see their humanity? Even if I don't have money, can I say, yo, what's up? How are you doing? And I do think at some level, all that, the word for that is hospitality. So do you know, let me throw one other thing. Hospitality, that word, if you translate it, like what is translated into hospitality in the New Testament is xenophilia. So, and you, we know the word xenophobia, mm-hmm. right? Scared of the other. So it's other. And then philia is like philosophy, like love of the other is what the word gets translated hospitality. And that, for some reason, that was a super powerful realization to me, like that's what that is. Yeah.
Huh. You know, one other connection just before I lose it that you made me think of is that, and there's something else, I think this happens in hospitality, at least the kind you're talking about, maybe we're both thinking about, and it's something that you do, I think you do naturally too, it's around stories, and the power of someone's story, and that when someone tells you their story, it's a valuable thing, right? There's a great Barry Lopez quote about this from one of his books, something in The Weasel, I'm blanking on it, but in that book, he talks about, you know, when people tell you their stories, you, they're entrusting you. You have to take great care of that, because sometimes people need their stories more than anything to live, right? Mm. So if you can respect that story and really hear it, you're giving this great gift. So, you know, treat that with respect. And I think that's part of the hospitality too. That's what, you know, that's, you're welcoming people, you're helping them feel at home, their story matters, they matter, because you're listening to them and they care about, you care about what they have to say. So I think it's all connected.
Speaking of stories.
The Crow and the Weasel, that's the book.
What's it called?
The Crow and the Weasel.
Crow and the Weasel, look it up. So speaking of stories, it sounded like there might have been a story around the, was it the chocolate shop?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you said there's a work ethic story there.
Yeah.
And I just made a little note to come back to.
Yeah, may the job be big or small, do it right or not at all. So that, at the chocolate shop, Mary Beth and Allison, and I think they recently closed it, they were there for a long time, two extraordinary people, one whose background is nutritionist and the other is, I think, occupational therapy. Those are the two owners of the chocolate shop. And they employed, or the only ones, I believe, most of the ones who were paid were people with different abilities and different challenges.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's who would make the chocolate. Their purpose for making that chocolate, their why, was all about the process and meaningful employment and a team that produced quality chocolate, but took care of each other. And so it happened. The chocolate was amazing. And so people would come in and maybe not know the whole backstory. They came in because the chocolate was really good.
Yep.
But I would... got to know them over the years, Martha Vineyard, and I would volunteer. And again, like the farm, I wasn't overly skilled at the chocolate making, but I knew I could connect with people. I think I could be supportive. I did get pretty good at making chocolate-covered caramels. There's three little dips you have to do. But anyway, but the idea was that they built this phenomenal community, had great respect for anyone who worked there, and people went at different rates, and there was different accommodations made, physical or otherwise, to help them do their part. And in the end, they produced amazing chocolate.
So that's it. Okay. Did you did they understand themselves as social enterprise? Did you know that word back then?
No. That's a great question.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a great question. Wow. I never, you know, I love that place, but I never made the connection. But totally, they were social enterprise. I mean, they were set up as a for-profit. We know that that doesn't matter what your your status
and
tax distinction is. But yeah, they totally were about the mission. They figured out to make enough money to support that mission. And in fact, sometimes were pushed by people like me and others who said, you have such a great thing here. Like, create more shops like this. Do this across the country. They were like, very clear. No, this is our shop.
This is what we do.
This is what community. We do. We're not looking to mass produce chocolate. You know, but they did have incredible impact on that community and certainly the people they were were working there. And a lot of people, I think, came to know what was going on. And maybe, you know, that some people probably came back for that, whatever they came back for. But absolutely, that was a great social enterprise. That was probably one of my earlier
exposure. And so I was curious about it, if it was known that by name or anything, because there's so many businesses out there with a couple like that that go, hey, we're going to do this thing because it's meaningful and important, and this is the community we're building, and there's a business is a great way to kind of serve this community. But the point that you said, but they, like, people didn't know the backstory, they had great chocolate. And I wanted to highlight that in the conversation of social enterprise. I think it's really important to, let's say, abstract that, like, to have great chocolate. So, you know, I think, you know, whether it be our bike shop or other social enterprises, I think sometimes there's a temptation to rely heavily on the why or the cause or the thing in a way that, like, allows for a lesser product. And it just stood out to me. You're like, yeah, but people just came in because they had the best chocolate. And I know of like a lawn company, a landscaping company in Birmingham, Alabama, that the reason, like, part of why they exist is to put guys to work that, but they have, like, this amazing team of professionals, and then they have, like, an extra seat that someone could come along and kind of be mentored in this craft. But it was, like, always crystal clear to me. They're like, no, but we don't talk about this missional piece of what we do. We're the best lawn company in town.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to win the game, and then we're going to bring someone along for the ride.
I think that is a nugget. If anyone tuned in to listen to learn something about social entrepreneurship, because both of us had an interest in that, I think take that away, what you just said. And I think that's why in the program and the work I've done in the field is it has to be this holistic approach. Right, it's not one part or another. You're figuring out how the stuff goes together. You got to figure out your business model. You got to do the market research. You have to understand the finances. Not doesn't make the mission any less important.
Yeah.
But do that stuff well and do the same kind of testing. You've got the capability. You're running this organization. It's nothing about smarts, but you may not feel like that is as important as the mission or something else, but it's not one or the other. They're integrated, and I think that's great. That's why in this program too, if just a little bit more on that,
please,
is that's why we put in leadership development, because you have to figure that piece out. You need to figure out your alignment and how you have impact, right? That's why we put in impact measurement, know what's happening and what are you trying to achieve. That's why we do clear business development and clear business skills, that because you got to apply that to have a sustainable business or organization, right?
Absolutely.
And that's, and again, there's lots of pieces that some people will say, well, can you just do one piece? You can, and each has value on their own. But I think the transformational piece is when you can pull those pieces together in some way and really get your business model down, be clear about your leadership, know your mission and your why and the impact you're trying to achieve, and then tell that story, show it in qualitative and quantitative, you know, data and stories, the impact you're going to have, and then you're going to start making the kind of difference you want to make.
I love it. I know it's tremendously helpful for really everybody that went the whole cohort that we went through together with. It was a huge help, and hopefully, we're going to be finding some ways to maybe keep plugging away at that and serving some others here locally. and maybe elsewhere as well. So let me ask you a question. I ask everybody that we have on how they would define success. How would you define success?
I think if my life is my message to, you know, not just the quote Gandhi, but really if people say, yeah, he's, I know who that guy is. I mean, it looks like he's aligning his actions with his values and having an impact. That's what I'm trying to do.
So I love that. And I agree fully with you too, like this, the importance of these things being aligned. What would you call it? I'll just say I like often will use the language of like propaganda. Like I think people tell a lot of stories about themselves that maybe don't map to, like, maybe we say we, okay, this is easy to do around poverty and faith, right? So like people like, you know, I believe God loves the poor. I believe that, I believe, you know, God has a heart for the poor and that we, you know, we should like love and serve the poor. And, but then they don't, right? Like actually you don't believe that. Like if you look at your life or your budget or your time you spend or whatever, it's like, you don't believe that. Like God loves the poor. Oh, which one? What's their name? Do you, like, and when's the last time you hung out with them or talked to them? Like you can't. So, and in my mind, the only word I have for that is propaganda. Like, it's a nice story you're telling. Mm-hmm. You think you believe that, but your behavior maps otherwise. So, another example might be, and this I think a lot of us are unknowingly, we'd be like, I think slavery is wrong, and I don't believe in slavery, and there shouldn't be any slaves. And it's like, yeah, totally. I think we would all agree with that. Mm-hmm. And then so much of, like, let's say, you know, we don't look into, like, where our clothing is being manufactured or how it's being made, and we want to get it in super cheap. And, like, we live lives that make demands on the world that create conditions we say we don't believe in, right? So, like, hopefully this is illustrating what I'm trying to ask you, because you're like saying, I would like someone to look at my life and go, he meant it. Like he fleshed out the things that he said he stood for and believed. And I think that's right. That is a good image of success. What do you call its opposite? How would you warn against that or talk about that lack of self-awareness that, like, because I imagine, I guess it just, if you're aiming at that, then that means there's something you're avoiding. Is that not?
I'm trying to figure out. So what's the flip side? What's the contrary to?
Yeah. Exactly. You know,
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is being a hypocrite. Right?
Sure.
Not doing, you know, not practicing what you're preaching.
Okay.
But that's not really what you're getting
at. It is.
I mean, that's why at least that was my thinking in changing careers again, recently. Okay. So maybe this is an answer. So, and I'm figuring it out, right? But the idea was, all right, I've been in higher ed for a while, and I'm really fascinated and focused on community all the time. I love teaching, but I really want to, I love partnering with the university and creating organizations. And for the last 10 years, I've been leading a program that's all about social entrepreneurship, social innovation, and practicing what you're preaching and making that connection. And so I wanted to do it. I wanted to try to practice what I was preaching and teaching, which is a lot harder than, you know, doing it is hard. And so I'm trying to figure that out. So I think that's consistent.
Oh, that's now, interesting. Yeah.
If I went instead and did something totally contrary to what my values were about and had been doing my whole life, then maybe that would be
sure
what you're saying. I don't know.
Also very hard to imagine. But right. If you went and did Mark just open up a strip club or something? Like it's just like wildly outside of the...
Right.
But no, it's actually really interesting as you talk about this career change, because and I remember when you first told me about it is... I can to run a social enterprise. Like your understanding of the JCCs and the thing you're doing now, that as social enterprise. How's that going?
Well,
go ahead.
I just want one last piece on this topic, and this is another thing we read about it in the book, and I don't know, I think it relates to this, and maybe more nuanced response to what you just asked about. But, so another thing that I don't, sometimes I wonder if I'm adhering to, is I have this thing about, you know, you don't want to, I don't want to just be fine, I don't want to just be okay, I want the work, I want the life to be extraordinary.
Yeah,
right? The impact to be extraordinary, to be alive, to do all these things that we say we want to do. And but it's hard. It's like a lot of work. You can get yourself in a bind if you're not feeling like what you're doing is enough, that it's just fine. Fine isn't good enough. And so what happens when you accept fine for a little bit? Does that help you be on the path to extraordinary? I'm not sure if that makes sense to you, John, but...
I want to riff on it a little bit. it does make a little bit of sense.
just a little.
Well, so I have... This is actually interesting. So for myself, like, there's so much that I want to see happen in the world. Like, so much of my work is actually tied to going the way things currently are. It's somewhat... this is unacceptable. It's unacceptable that we live in a city where these needs aren't met with people, or people are sleeping outside, or that, that relationships are breaking down. And, like, there's a lot of work to be done, and that's engaging and meaningful, but, like, the scope of it is so beyond any one of us that it's like, okay, well, the good news is there's plenty of work to do. I'll get to play this game forever. But the thing that I've seen... So, actually... I think the best way to illustrate this is my hypothesis around burnout. So when I have seen others burn out, or when I have like felt like a little gassed myself, I think I associate it with needing to see like fruit, like results, totally. Like something come of it.
Right.
And I actually, I've like really, you know, in the mirror cautioned myself against the results orientation, that I'm like, actually the work itself is meaningful and worth doing, and come what may, like, obviously if this, you know, if you're using the wrong tool, you might want to get a better tool and like have sense enough to do good work or the best work you're capable of, but not like letting the chips fall where they will a little bit in terms of results to go, that's not on me. To serve the work rather than the results. Go, I see your wheels turning.
I'm totally with you, and this is, it's a challenge, right? Because community change takes like fine wine takes time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And incremental change is part of the reality sometimes.
That's right.
But for someone who wants to be innovative, you know, and a change maker, it's tough to accept that some things take so much time. It's like painful, right?
Right.
And so sometimes if you, that I'm with you, like that's the times that have been the biggest struggles when I don't feel like enough is changing quickly enough. Like, how did these visionaries make so much change? And part of the answer is it took them a lifetime.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
It took them a lifetime
of work. Watching how a stream can change the shape of
that's
a mountain.
Right. That's right.
Yep.
But that's, so they, hey, that person had an extraordinary life, or that what they created, that was amazing. They didn't do it overnight. And you can say that to yourself, but there are times, I think, too, whether it's burnout or you get into a funk or whatever it is, I think that for me, in doing community work, those have been the toughest times. That's when, I mean, if I'm honest, I was so into the hosteling world that I was convinced it was going to change the world.
Yeah.
Like, cross-cultural exchange, building peace and understanding. Like, we had the CEO who believed it should win the Nobel Prize for peace if we fulfilled our mission. That's what we should accomplish. I love that idea.
That's
amazing. When we weren't winning the Nobel Prize, in the next day, I got kind of overwhelmed. Like, how am I going to help us win the Nobel Prize through hosteling?
Interesting.
Because I believed it. And so when it starts not to happen, how do you balance that? And I think that's when, you know, get in trouble. That's when I've gotten into trouble.
No, I think that's right. And then the idea of, we use the word enough, like, you know, there's more than you can ever accomplish. And so, like, this is why, like, people are like, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm doing my best. It's like, all you can do is what you can do, right? Like, just do what you're capable of doing. And recognizing that so much of the need is beyond our ability to do, but also at the same time, like, I think there's an identity piece where it's like knowing, like, I like to go, I am enough, not am I doing enough, right? Like that there's a different orientation around like being fully like the best version of me that I can be. So in some sense, success in my mind then is getting out of me what I'm capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what that is, so let's see what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
But, like, that would be good. And, like, just to wring the sponge out. You know what I mean? For to use that image or whatever.
That's good.
And then that is a journey of exploring, and trying to figure that out. So is there any, do you have any, like, asks for people listening? Is there any, like, what, like, places they can get in touch with you or should be following you somewhere or, like, where they can get your book or is there anywhere you want to point them or anything like that?
Thanks. Well, I mean, I'm glad for people to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Maybe you have an idea to connect on a program, co-create something. If you're into social enterprise, you know, talk to John and me and some others.
Please.
Yeah. Let's see what's happening. Yeah, the book is actually published on Sage. It's being republished again by Atlantic coming up in a few months. So that's exciting for us. And I don't know, I put in my LinkedIn if you want to invite me to come in and talk with you about somewhere in the world about the organization and help me with that wanderlust. Sure. You know, come to Australia
or
India
a
bunch of times and Saudi Arabia. I don't know. So those kind of things. But I have loved a lot creating new things and building community and discovering home wherever I roam. So if people are into any of those things and want to connect, reach out on LinkedIn. It's a good place to do it.
What is the book called?
Your Life is Your Message, Discovering the Core of Transformational Leadership by Nancy Blair and Mark Gessner.
There you go. Needed that so people could
pull
it up and Google it, man, and order the dang.
Yeah, and it has a lot of these stories, and you know, we have some characters in there, and some of those little lessons. I don't think I have about the carrots or something, but you know, I'll hear one last little lesson.
Yeah, please bring it on.
These are the things. So, this may not seem like a big deal to you, and you may not have known it, but I had a friend just a couple of years ago who was watching me stir the cream in the coffee, and he said, "Mark, if you put the cream in first and then pour the coffee, it mixes itself." That was like a great epiphany to me.
My wife tells me this all the time. I don't put cream in my coffee, but but if I make her coffee, like she wants some cream, and then it's not just it's better if you do it this way, it's you're doing it wrong. Like if you're not putting the cream in first, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, but here's the bigger point, maybe just to tie some of this together, is that it was like an innovation. I'm into that, right? So
yeah.
So that's an innovation, or Rudy talking about the power of good questions, or my friend Steve, or Barry Lopez talking about how important stories are, or on and on, you know, about the chocolate shop and how you build community and fuse relationships into the work. They may seem like little things at the time, but I think when you mix them together, even without a spoon, but you know, when you mix these things together, they can help shape and guide and help you align what you believe is important, your values and your actions, so you can have an impact.
I do want to ask you about innovation. I don't even know how to ask that. Like you pointing out like that's an innovation, and like as you like even thinking about your as you were talking about values, you connected exploration and innovation as like things that you value. And I was curious, like, what is a value for innovation? Like what is innovation in the sense that, like, that it is something to be valued? Like, you understand what I'm asking?
Or what is the value of innovation?
Yeah. Like, why is innovation a thing to be valued?
My answer at the moment is the beauty of creativity.
Okay.
Right? And of creating new things that have different roles or different purposes or just are aesthetically amazing.
Yeah.
I think innovation, if done right, I would hope improves the quality of life.
It's just beauty, you know, and value. Like it's
the beauty of the creativity, the beauty of the creation, and and the influence and impact that it has.
So I'm glad I asked you that, because I think that's good. I think that's right. And then it's easier for my mind to go, oh, and creation, like to create is, in my mind, like self-evidently valuable, like to bring something into being. And I guess in some sense, that's what innovation is then.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's amazing on its own merit. And then beyond that,
yeah,
the impact it has. So go out and innovate.
Man, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for doing this. Those of you that didn't pick up on this, and I didn't say it at the beginning of the show, but we did a episode, Mark was on, kind of, with Isaac McCoy. If you go back a few episodes and look for Mr. McCoy, Mark was on that podcast, although you kind of like quietly were by the wayside for that, but you were engaged a bit there, but I'm really glad we were able to get you on finally to do it, just you and I. Appreciate you making time, man.
Thank you, John. Appreciate being here.
Yes, sir.